This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Holy smokes, do we have a lot to get into today. And I mean a lot, both from last night, both for this evening, and also look forward to tomorrow. Elliot Friedman is going to check in to kick off hour two from the general manager's meetings in Florida, where Gary Bettman, commissioner of the NHL, mentioned a couple of things, as did Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly, which are particularly salient. Bettman mentioning that HRR looks to be trending towards $6.2 billion. We'll find out what the salary cap officially is at some point as well. Bill Daly was asked about the Arizona Coyotes and owner Alex Morello, and if the league would be able to pivot to move the franchise if they did not secure the land that they're trying to purchase on auction in June. And Daly said probably not, but also the NHL not commenting whether it even gets that far or a decision will maybe need to be made on the future of the Arizona Coyotes even before that auction. So that's from the managers' meetings. We talked a little bit yesterday about some of the new tweaks that are being put forward to some of the rules, whether it's leg over boards, whether it's coaches' challenge on high sticks and pucks over glass. Things need to go through competition committee. The Board of Governors still there. No changes to overtime. The issue with goalies deliberately dislodging the net. All these types of things we'll get into with Elliot and also Scott Laughlin, who's going to join me here in a couple of moments from SiriusXM, NHL Network Radio. So coming up on the program today, Scotty's going to stop by here in a couple of moments. Always look forward to talking to Scott. Mike Modano is going to stop by. He of the statue. Hands up, who has a statue of them out in the audience here? That's right. Mike Modano stops by at the bottom of the hour. I mentioned Elliot Friedman is going to pop by in hour two, the news of the day. And also we'll talk about the general manager's meetings and the comments from the NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman and Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly. In the meantime, a few things to get into. And I want to play, I want to read something to you. To take you back to my old iDesk days with Scotty Morrison and reading tweets. But this one is particularly salient, I suppose, considering this is a player who played for John Tortorella, both with the Rangers and the Columbus Blue Jackets. This is Brandon Dubinsky. Dubinsky commenting on the healthy scratching of Sean Couturier yesterday. By the way, the Philadelphia Flyers won, a close one, as it turns out, over the Toronto Maple Leafs 4-3. No Sean Couturier in this one, to which Brandon Dubinsky tweets this out. Torts, your tactics are getting old. Instead of scratching and embarrassing your captain and one of your best players, how about try to tell him I'm giving you 20 minutes tomorrow night, no matter what, with power play and penalty kill, and go play free, have fun, and effing get it done. Hashtag free Couturier. That is from Brandon Dubinsky, former Blue Jacket, former Ranger under John Tortorella. We're going to get into this conversation here with Scott in a couple of moments as well. The Islanders lose again. The Carolina Hurricanes win again. And don't look now, but the Carolina Hurricanes are very much creeping up on the New York Rangers for top spot in the Metropolitan. They are now a scant 2 points out of first. They've played 69 games, so have the New York Rangers. The Rangers squandered one yesterday, doubled up yesterday by the Winnipeg Jets. Big night for Mark Scheifele with 3 goals. 4-2 is the final there. Connor Hellebuck was magnifique. But Carolina beats the Islanders. Jarvis with 2 goals, Brady Shea with 2 assists in this one. The Islanders have now lost 5 games in a row. And we talk about teams that have squandered opportunities. Top of that list, the New York Islanders. I do not want to be, if I'm an Islander player, anywhere near Patrick Waugh right now. 6 goals in the last game, in the last 5 games for the New York Islanders. This is a team that is challenged to find pucks in the nets. And as I mentioned, Carolina 2 points out of first. And things are not going exactly swimmingly here for the New York Islanders. They've lost 5 games in a row and they can't seem to pull themselves out of their funk. And they're watching their playoff chances and opportunities sail away. Columbus and Detroit, 4-3 is the final here. This was a weird one. I don't think if you watched the first period, you thought by any way, shape, or form, Detroit was going to pull themselves up and get into this game. But they did somehow. And then Patrick Kane with the overtime heroics. Great to see Vladimir Konstantinov in the crowd yesterday celebrating his birthday, the obligatory shot. And listen, he was one of my favorite Detroit Red Wings man at the time. And it's funny, I just watched the Russian Five again yesterday afternoon when the show was over. So I had Konstantinov fresh in my mind. And there he was yesterday at Little Caesars. Nice celebration for him. Here becomes the question. Mo Sider on Johnny Gaudreau. Was it a pick? I mean, Gaudreau certainly thinks it was. It was shades of the old Mike Babcock Detroit Red Wings, where they would not necessarily Carl Malone in front of a player, but maybe just shade them a little bit and slow them down. Skating picks, casual picks, whatever we used to call those things. We saw that yesterday from Moritz Seider. Anyhow, let's get to the news of the day and a recap of what happened last night and maybe a preview of this evening, if we have time, with our good friend Scott Laughlin from NHL Network Radio on Sirius XM. Scotty, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Jeff. I love the John Stockton, Karl Malone. Nobody ran the pick and roll like the Utah Jazz back in the day, right?
They were the best, Scotty. You know it. They were the best. Well, let me open up with that one because listen, we've seen this before. Listen, Todd McClellan, who was there with Babcock for years, you know, whichever team he's coached, they've run these sort of plays. They're not real picks. Like, you're not like Sider didn't stand right in front of Gaudreau, but just sort of got enough of them. And again, let's not forget, it's 3-on-3. So there's a lot of ice out there. There's a lot of way for you to get out of the way and not interfere, but just enough for Johnny Gaudreau to free up Patrick Kane, who, you know, goes showtime. The Detroit Red Wings win this one. Was that a pick that we saw last night? Should it have been interference, or was it at best a 50-50 play for you?
Yeah, 50-50. And look, these things, of course, more often than not, get sold in a certain way. And I think that it's just subtle enough to not get called, whereas obviously if you're on the Columbus side of things in Gaudreau, you're thinking it should have been. So, yeah, look, we see it. And we see it in the NBA on a game-in, game-out basis. You see it in the NFL today these days as well, too, Jeff, I think, too. And sometimes guys get called on it because they block before the ball's even left the quarterback's hands. Other times, of course, it's let allowed to stand because of the fact that the ball's been released. So, again, if you can make it look subtle enough, I think that it can pass the test, and at least for Detroit last night, it passed the test. And I tell you what, I mean, you were thinking, boy, this team's in trouble, right? Like, this is a game that they have to win against an opponent that they have to beat, given their circumstances. Yes. They had lost, what, 8 of 9 going in. The reality was somebody had to step up, and Lucas Raymond has been doing it throughout this stretch for the Detroit Red Wings, too. I mean, if there's been one player that, even with them being in this funk, that has produced, it's been Lucas Raymond. And of course, when the game's on the line and the lights are going to be shining brightest, it's showtime that goes to work once again.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and the place went berserk, as they should. And to your point, that was a game Detroit absolutely needed to win, because it seems as if, you know, everybody are in and around that final wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. It's hot potato. Nobody wants it. Pass it on. I don't want this spot. Washington seems like they might be the only one that wants this spot, but I do wonder if they're more considering, you know, third place in the Metropolitan. We'll get to that in the Philadelphia Flyers in a hot second here. But, you know, the Detroit's a fascinating team right now, and we're all excited about 5 minutes ago when we thought they had a playoff spot locked up, and we're thinking, okay, the new building's finally going to see some playoff atmosphere and some playoff action, and remember what it was like when Detroit was in the postseason, and hopefully for their sake and their fans' sakes, we get back to that. But it's been like, when you look at this, I don't even know if I want to call it a race. Nobody seems to want this. The Islanders have squandered it. Detroit has squandered it. You know, Washington has, I believe, the second, third, maybe fourth, depending on how you slice it, worst looking schedule down the stretch as well. So it's going to be tough sledding for them. It seems as if nobody really wants to grab that wild card spot, unlike what Tampa's done with the first wild card, or what Nashville's done in the West with the first wild card, just grabbed it and said, we're not letting this thing go at all. How do you see this race for a wild card spot in the East, Scotty? And are New Jersey still in it? And if we squint, do we say Pittsburgh is still in it?
Yeah, we called it this morning, Jeff, or at least I called it on our show. I called it the loser leaves town match, right? In the professional wrestling vernacular, last night at The Rock, it was the Penguins and Devils. Loser has to go on to the next territory, and then the guy who wins the match can stick around a little bit longer. So New Jersey lives to fight another day. Pittsburgh, we're not quite sure. They might be on to Portland, perhaps, where Roddy Piper used to run roughshod back in the early days, as you know. Regardless,
Don Owens.
The point is,
Don Owens' promotion, very good.
The point is that it is a turtle race right now. And the only team that's picking up any sort of steam, like you say, Jeff, is the Washington Capitals. And somehow, some way, they've done it. They've done it with Ovi not getting close to 30 goals, certainly not 40 or 50 like we had grown used to seeing in years gone by. It's saying that these are not your big brother's Washington Capitals. This is a team that's not going to go out there and beat you 5-3 every night anymore. They're going to have to get good goaltending. And they've got great goaltending of late from Chucky Lindgren, who's doing it once again, right? He did it for Montreal, obviously, for a bit. Went to St. Louis and became a bit of a cult hero a couple of years ago. Now he's the guy that most often is bringing it for Washington. So I think when you look at the landscape in the Eastern Conference, right now, if you're a Caps fan, you're loving it. They have two games in hand on the Philadelphia Flyers, too, with 3 points still to make up. Now, tonight's a tough one against the Leafs team, albeit the Leafs coming in off a back-to-back, certainly in Philadelphia last night. But tonight's a gettable game for them. Then you remember, of course, they're coming back off that five-game West Coast trip, and sometimes the legs aren't maybe operating the way that you want. So to answer your question, look, I think Washington's right now in the catbird seat. Detroit's trying to get it back together, of course, and as we've known, they've been without Larkin, and that injury has really curtailed Detroit's attempts here at making the playoffs. We'll have to see if they've got enough. And the Islanders, once again, it's the same old story, Jeff. They just can't score, right? And I know Patrick Waugh, you know, pointing the finger at Sorokin and saying he knows he has to be better. I'm not pleased with his performance in the whole bit, but it's the same old story with the New York Islanders, right? It's been this way for years. You know, you go back to Doug Waite. I guess that's when they were scoring, but then you're thinking, are we scoring too much and we can't play good team defense? Enter Barry Trotz, of course, and he had a couple of great years there with the Islanders. But again, you're wondering, where's that extra half goal per game going to come from? We're still kind of wondering that all these years later about the New York Islanders.
We sure are. And just to put a final thought here on the Caps and their schedule. So this to us from Sportsnet's research department, the Washington Capitals, Scotty, have the fourth toughest remaining strength of schedule using remaining opponents' combined points percentage. Boston has the toughest, 603. Montreal, second at 596. Columbus at 594. Washington at 593. And just to further your point about that game at the Rock yesterday, the Penguins in fifth at 586 for strength of schedule. So not looking good for Crosby and company, and a real tough slog here for Spencer Carberry. Let me get to Sean Couturier. Let me get to Sean Couturier and the Philadelphia Flyers. Yesterday was a roll of the dice for John Tortorella. Not that he's ever shy about gambling like this, although in John Tortorella's mind, it's not a gamble. We're icing the 20 best. We're icing the 20 best that can get us a win here. I'm not taking any questions on Sean Couturier. That's my really bad impression of John Tortorella, by the way. So 4-3 is the final score, and you know, Torts is hearing it from Sean Couturier's agent. He's also, as of a couple of hours ago, when I read the tweet off the top of the show, not sure if you caught it, hearing it from former players, Brandon Dubinsky. Torts, your tactics are getting old. Instead of scratching and embarrassing your captain, one of your best players, how about try to tell him I'm giving you 20 minutes tomorrow night no matter what, with power play and penalty kill. Go play free, have fun, and effing get it done. Hashtag free Couturier. Dubinsky, of course, played under Tortorella with Columbus and the New York Rangers. So, and you guys talked about this on your morning show this morning, and I think it's a great point. If you subscribe to the philosophy of you never change a winning lineup, does Couturier get in against Carolina? Fascinating. What do you do here?
No, I think he addressed the captain coming up tomorrow night. I think that he's made his point. I think that he sent his message. And as you and Friedge talked about towards the end of your show yesterday, Jeff, I mean, this is John Tortorella, right? Whether you're number one on the roster, whether you're the 20th guy on the roster, whether you're going to the Hall of Fame, or whether or not you're a guy who's up and down between the American Hockey League and the NHL, he's not going to pick and choose. Yep. He could care less about your status. It's been proven once again, and we know it's a risky maneuver. When your captain was named captain 34, 35 days earlier, and all of a sudden you're not stripping him of the captaincy, but you're kind of questioning him being in the lineup and sending a message that way, that's a strong, strong statement to make, and that can backfire big time, there's no question. The fact that Dubinsky's come out and done this, I guess you'd surprise nobody. He was never a favorite of John back in the day, and John was quite frankly not a fan of him either. So you're going to have guys that are going to come out, and you know we've talked about whether it's Scotty Bowman or Mike Keenan or John Tortorella or whomever. you know, you have to have a certain mentality and mindset to be able to play for a guy like that. And remember when Mike Keenan used to coach Chicago and the Rangers and the whole bit, you're like, hey, Brian Noonan's back with Mike Keenan again, right? Greg Gilbert's back with Mike Keenan again. Yeah. You know, Stephan Matteau, the whole bit. Yes. I mean, all these guys could play for Mike Keenan back in the day. You had to be of that certain mindset and mentality, I think. And if you're not, then you certainly don't last, and obviously relationships will be cast aside. So to answer your question, Jeff, I think the message has been sent. I think deep down, even though he has no bones about benching a guy, I think he does realize that Couturier does carry a certain weight within that room. Everybody loves the great comeback story that's been Sean Couturier, named the captain recently. I think he proved his point. I think he's trying to make the room a little bit unsettled, because I think he realizes, to our points here, that they're in a real, real tough stretch here. And this is a young team that he doesn't want to feel comfortable at this point. He wants to make them almost feel uncomfortable at this point, and he wants to get guys refocused on the stretch run here, and this was one way to do it. They got the 2 points. I know the Leafs hit 5 goalposts along the way, but the reality is they got the 2 points, and they were much needed last night. I expect Couturier would probably play tomorrow night.
I agree, and I think that's the same thing. The only thing about it, Scott, is I gave up a long time ago guessing what John Tortorella is going to do. I gave up years. Like you talk about, I loved your analogy with Mike Keenan. I think that's bang on.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the only difference is it always, like the thing about Keenan was whenever he got to a team, he always went right to the power base and attacked it and made sure that he had that under control. And you mentioned Chicago, and listen, you can remember the issues that Mike Keenan had with Denny Savard. Like right away, I'm going after the power base. Boom, it's going to be, I'm going to show everyone here that I'm in charge, and I'm going to use Denny Savard to prove my points. I don't know that Torts follows that exact philosophy. Like, I do believe that in his mind, he's seeing these are the best 20 that I have, and that's what I'm going to go with right now. Couture's not bringing it. But the thing about Philadelphia is right now that we keep hearing, you know, whether it's, you know, Daniel Briere or Keith Jones or Dan Hilferty, when Hilferty is interviewed, all they talk about is the long view and the big picture and not just going game to game and trying to win, do whatever it takes just to get that 2 points every game. It's more like, what is this move going to mean for the future? I almost wonder now if the Philadelphia Flyers, Scotty, seem a little bit caught up in, holy smokes, here we found ourselves in a playoff position, we can't squander this. Maybe I don't want to say you take your eyes off the bigger picture, but maybe you just sort of tilt one eye off to the side a little bit here and say, hold on a second, we can make the playoffs during a rebuild. What owner won't sign up for that? Do you think Philly might be a little bit guilty of that? Because I think long view, this may not be the right move. But short term, in Tortorella's mind, it clearly is.
100%, Jeff. I think you're bang on with that assessment. I think they went into this season feeling like, okay, maybe we can push for a playoff spot, hang around and play some meaningful games into February and March, but probably ultimately we're going to come up on the short end of the stick, but we're going to make another step up that ladder, and next season is when we can go call kind of all in again and try to get back to the playoffs for the first time in a couple of years. So I think you're exactly right. I think they woke up and they saw that they were actually in third place in the Metropolitan Division, and maybe to a certain extent the expectations have changed for this team. And I think when it started, I think John Tortorella probably went and talked with Keith Jones and he talked to Danny Briere and basically said, look, there are going to be some rough spots here. Like, we're going to have some growing pains. There are going to be some times where guys get scratched, and this is all going to be worth it in the long run. If you allow me to do what I can do here in the short term, it'll pay off in the long run. To your point, Jeff, it feels like the long run has come a lot quicker than anybody could have expected. And because of all that, I think the expectations have changed, and you're thinking, hey, why not us now? You know, we now have 13 games left. If you're Philadelphia, we've got 13 games left. We beat the Leafs last night, and they had a number, of course, over the last couple of years. We got that done as well. Why can't we hang on and make the playoffs now? Because to your point, financially it means something for a team to get there and have a couple of playoff home dates. So I think right now they're trying to have their cake and they're trying to eat it too. They're trying to get to the playoffs still, knowing that, of course, they've got the back nine still to play.
Excellent points. A couple of things here from last night as well. Scale of 1 to 10. All right, Scotty, scale of 1 to 10 for you right now. how concerned are you? And maybe the answer is not at all. But if you're the Vegas Golden Knights, are you starting to hear some footsteps here? I mean, Minnesota wins. Like, I know it was a tough weekend for the Minnesota Wild, but they beat the Ducks yesterday. They got a home and home, or they got a back-to-back, rather. So they're playing the Los Angeles Kings tonight. All of a sudden, the Minnesota Wild are creeping. Vegas loses a tough one to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Tampa's fourth straight win there. Kucherov with 4 points. Wash, rinse, repeat. Anthony DeClaire continues to excel for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Are you hearing footsteps if you're Kelly McCrimmon and Bruce Cassidy and Jack Eichel and Aiden Hill and Alex Pietrangelo? How are you feeling about Vegas, Scotty?
Well, I think they're hearing footsteps, and I think Minnesota has earned the right to say that they're right there in the mix. If they beat Los Angeles tonight, Jeff, to wake up tomorrow and see that Minnesota will be 1 point back of Vegas for the final spot in the Western Conference as far as the wild card hunt is concerned, I think would be rather eye-opening. Now, granted, again, Vegas would have 2 games in hand still on Minnesota, but Minnesota has earned their way back into it. I think it's been impressive. I know they've pitched a couple of shutouts here of late against the Ducks, but you've got to beat who are on your schedule, no question. I think everybody's excited about the youngster, Hustadinov, who comes over, picks up his first NHL point last night, too. So a little bit of a burst there for that team. Look, they put themselves into a good position. And as far as when we need to, and that still might be the case, right? That still might be the case. By the way, Minnesota and Vegas play 2 more times the rest of the way. So those matchups here in the next couple of weeks could really determine who actually gets that final spot in the Western Conference. And again, Vegas perhaps has their sights set on Los Angeles and third in the Pacific before it's all said and done. But getting back to it, as far as Vegas is concerned, it's much more than just saying, hey, we're defending cup champions and here we go. When you bring in some bodies, and we talk about them going out and getting Mantha and Hanifin and eventually going to have Thomas Hertl, the all-star, jump in and make his debut here in the next week or two for Vegas as well. That's all well and good, but it does take some time to acclimate, especially this deep into a season. You know, and let's not forget, too, that Jack Eichel just came back a couple of games ago, too, and had missed all that time as well. So I think on the fly, you're trying to make everything work. I think ultimately Bruce Cassidy probably can get it all together for this team to get to the postseason. And as we know, at that point, they could become a very, very dangerous animal once again. But I think that when you're trying to bring in new faces into your room and to play a certain way on the ice, sometimes you do have a couple of hiccups along the way. That little bit of a hiccup from Vegas and a little bit of improved play from Minnesota has made this a little bit more interesting than certainly the fan base out there would have liked.
I don't want to say that last night ended it for the Buffalo Sabres, although coming away from that game yesterday, Elias Pettersson was fantastic. I mean, the whole top line, Connor Garland on that top line with the opening goal, which drew the ire, certainly the Buffalo Sabres and Don Granato. Casey DeSmith, not really tested, only 15 saves he had to make in this one. Devon Levi gets the start. Eric Comrie very much the out of the mix as it comes to goaltending with the Buffalo Sabres. But I don't know that I want to say Buffalo is 100% done, but man, when that game was over last night and I switched over, I kind of said to myself, I wonder if that's it for the Buffalo Sabres. Did you feel the same way?
Yeah, I was disappointed in Buffalo's effort last night, Jeff. I know, like, you're coming off your first ever win against the Kraken just the night before, probably got into Vancouver in the wee hours of the morning and the whole bit. I just don't think there are any excuses at this stage of the game, right? Well, we got a back-to-back. Okay, well, suck it up. Go find a way to win, right? The Rangers went 11-1 this season in the second of back-to-backs. Like, we talked about the NBA off the top. Those are usually gimmies in the second of a back-to-back. You're kind of mailing in that second game. Rangers said, no, we're going to go 11-1. Comparatively speaking, of course, the Islanders have kind of dropped the ball in the second of back-to-back games. So at this stage, if you're Buffalo, you have to win. Who cares if you're playing back-to-back? It's not that far, of course, to travel from Seattle to Vancouver to begin with. I think that, you know, the fact that they're the youngest team in the NHL right now, okay, so be it. Put the big boy pants on now. Go make the playoffs for the first time in about 13 years. It's disappointing to see them with such a lack of pushback last night. Now, we say that fully acknowledging that the Vancouver Canucks are battling for a President's Trophy for a reason, right? They're one of the top teams in the league, and they're really, really good. But I was just disappointed. There wasn't more of a pushback from Buffalo last night. I thought that Devon Levi, like the first goal, of course, kind of got past him on the short side, and the puck was in, I think, before the pad was pushed back, so the Situation Room got that one right. And then Donnie Granato challenged it to boot, and that came up snake eyes for him. But I just look at it, and I think Devon Levi was really good, given the fact that he hadn't played in the NHL for a bit, despite playing well at Rochester. I just thought Buffalo, didn't you, Jeff, would have just a little bit more pushback last night with so much on the line.
They came out flat. Like, if it wasn't for Devon Levi in that first period, it should have been, what, like 3-0, Scotty? Maybe even 4.
Yeah.
You know, you look up and, like, the shots are, like, 15-3. And you're like, which team is desperate here?
Yeah.
Like, I know that, you know, maybe Vancouver's thinking, you know, okay, maybe, you know, I don't know if they can catch us, but at least, you know, the Edmonton Oilers seem like they're breathing hard in second right now. But there's not a ton of, like, we're going to lose our spot pressure right now for the Vancouver Canucks. If anything, it's got to be house on fire for the Buffalo Sabres. And to your point, they came out yesterday with nothing. And that's why, you know, I mentioned Casey DeSmith only had to make, you know, barely over a dozen saves in that game. Like, that was Vancouver from stem to stern. And I got to tell you, if you're the Buffalo Sabres, and again, it's only the one game here for Levi, although at times he's played really well this season for the Buffalo Sabres. I think the stint in Rochester has done him a ton of good. Maybe you should have started him in Rochester this season and followed a more traditional goalie development path, but that's for a different conversation. If you're the Buffalo Sabres, do you not have to feel really good about what your goaltending is going to look like next year?
Between absolutely.
And Devon Levi right now looks fantastic.
Yeah, no, and I think you've been pretty steadfast in your opinion, Jeff, that Levi should have seen more American Hockey League time to start the season. I wasn't necessarily in that camp. I mean, I bought into the hype, and we remember the World Juniors not so long ago. But in retrospect, maybe the right place for him to be would have been with the Amerks to start the campaign at the very least and build his way up into the NHL. The other thing, though, I would think about with regards to that, and you're right, they are set with that 1-2 punch between the pipes for years to come, is that UPL back in October and November wasn't the UPL we're seeing these days, right? Like, this guy's been so good for Buffalo, playing each and every game. What you have to know, Jeff, 5 shutouts, I believe, off the top of my head. I think it's 5. And the reality is that he has solidified their goaltending. They didn't have that solidification take place back in October and November. And so I think they were kind of searching, looking for some answers. And is UPL the guy? Is Devon Levi the guy? Is Comrie going to get healthy? Can we take a look at him? Is he going to be the guy to pick it up and run with it here in the short term? So I think the fact that Ukko Pekka-Luukkonen has stepped up to play as well as he has here the past couple of months has really made them take the big exhale in Western New York. And then to see Devon Levi go to Rochester and play as well as he has too has been music to their ears. And, that's one thing. I mean, the Sabres are still going to have some questions once they hit the offseason, no question about it. But, you know, I think that's one thing that Kevin Adams has to feel real good about is what his goaltending is going to look like to start next season.
I totally agree. And the thing about Luukkonen as well is you can remember, he couldn't even get into a game in October. Like, you look at how many times this guy's been false started. Even, you know, towards the end of last year, okay, they didn't want to make him available to the Rochester Americans, didn't want to have that, you know, that paper transaction occur because in their minds he was an NHLer. But then here comes Devon Levi, and who played all the games down the stretch? It's Devon Levi. And then Luukkonen couldn't even be sent to the American Hockey League to get that valuable experience. And Rochester went on a great run, ended up bowing out to Hershey. But you know, you look at it, and all that valuable, you know, playoff experience went to Malcolm Subban instead of Ukko Pekka-Luukkonen. Like, he's been, and maybe it's just because he was drafted by a previous regime, I don't know, but it seems like he's been false started after false started after false started. I'm glad that finally he's had a run, and since the calendar flipped in January, Scotty, correct me if I'm wrong, he's been the number one netminder in the NHL.
I think you're right.
Save percentage, and you mentioned the shutouts as well.
Well, and Jeff, knowing junior hockey like you do, too, you remember back to his days in Sudbury. I believe he was the Ontario Hockey League's top goaltender one season, right? So he had the pedigree.
Yes, he was.
Coming in. He had the pedigree coming in. The only questions about him to start his career seemed to be injury-wise. You know, was he going to have hip issues? Yeah. Was he going to have a knee issue or anything like that that would curtail his activity? I thought for him for a while it was a struggle to get healthy. But once he got physically right and the confidence started to return to his game earlier this season, And let's face it, I mean, Buffalo's defense has been better this season than last season. And we talk about the youngsters on the back end. They're going to make mistakes. And I don't think they got the return on Eric Johnson in the stay that he had there that they were hoping for, or Connor Clifton, who's still there, as we know. But they've got a young defense that's getting better and better as it goes along here. And, you know, now the question is up front. Are you going to have enough offense to win? Last night, like we say, they couldn't supply that offense and couldn't get the job done. And we'll wait and see. As you know, too, when you talk about Savoy and Kulik and all the players like that that they've got that are on the horizon, they're going to be fine up front, too. It's just a matter of waiting this thing out. I know Sabres fans don't want to hear that after 12 or 13 years without being in the playoffs. But it's further waiting for the Buffalo Sabres. A missed opportunity last night. We'll see if they can salvage the rest of this Western Conference trip.
Excellent stuff as always. I got about 30 seconds. I have Mike Modano coming up on the other side. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite Mike Modano memory?
Well, I guess it wouldn't be necessarily a memory other than just the fact of the image that we always talk about, right? Because people used to talk about LaFleur coming down the right wing with the hair flowing back in the breeze. Everybody remembers with Mike, it was the sweater. It was number 9, and he was always one of the best skaters in the NHL. It would just be him coming through that middle of the ice, Jeff, and that sweater was just flying back in the breeze. He was just such a smooth offensive player, could see the ice so well, and you know what? Top pick in, 88 out of Prince Albert, right? Just a fantastic career. Yep, and just a great guy, as you well know.
Absolutely. Looking forward to talking to him in a couple of moments. Always look forward to catching up with you. Scotty, thanks as always. You have an enjoyable rest of your day, and we'll catch up soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeff.
There he is, the great Scott Laughlin from NHL Morning Skate on NHL Network Radio, Sirius XM Channel 91. Mike Modano coming up on the other side. Elliot Friedman from the General Manager's Meetings coming up at the top of the hour. The latest from Gary Bettman as it relates to hockey-related revenue and also the future of the Arizona Coyotes. This is a recording. Modano is next. The Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network simulcast on Sportsnet 360 and wherever you get your podcasts. Back in a moment.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Still to come, top of the hour, Elliot Friedman checks in from the general manager's meetings in Florida. In the meantime, my next guest is a Hall of Famer. He is now a senior advisor to the Minnesota Wild. We saw over the weekend the statue unveiling in Dallas. He's a Hockey Hall of Famer. He's a Stanley Cup champion. And I'll paraphrase Lou Nanny here, who said when he drafted Mike Modano to the Minnesota North Stars in 1988, he has the ability to put butts in the seats and then bring those butts out of the seats when he starts playing. He's the one and only Mike Modano, and he joins me now. Mike, how are you today? Thanks so much for doing this.
I'm good, Jeff. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, too. First of all, before we get to what we just saw with the statue unveiling, and by the way, the statue is gorgeous, and I want to get to that in a couple of moments, but what do you recall from Lou Nanny, who, by the way, just as we all know, wrapped up 60 years of calling the Minnesota State High School Championships? What do you remember from Lou Nanny going to scout you, meet you in PA back in 1988, and then, you know, drafting you first overall?
Oh boy, it was a busy summer to say the least. I think in middle of May, I think I made some trips to Traverse City, Michigan, where the North Stars were having their final wrap up meetings for the draft that year. And you know, so I went in there. Me and Trevor Linnett actually went in there for some interviews. Sat down with all the brass, the scouts, and you know, the higher ups. I think they were kind of trying to really make sure that they had the right pick, and they knew everything about Trevor and I before they went forward in Montreal. And then, you know, so it was pretty intense meetings. And then I made my way out to Vancouver, and Tony Tanney met me at the airport, and we went out in Vancouver, had a great time with the Griffins, Pat Quinn. We went out in the boat, went around Vancouver, and had a great old time, a little opposite from the Minnesota meetings. We just bounced around Vancouver and had a great time with Tony and everybody else. So Yeah, it was two extremes, and ultimately, I think Lou, kept it a surprise. Neither one of us knew what was going to happen in Montreal that day, and then he went up to the podium. That rest of history.
Must have been the best feeling in the world too. I can only imagine that. And you've had a lot of great feelings along the way. And 99 was probably top of that list, winning the Stanley Cup. But let me take you back to March 16th and the unveiling of the statue at American Airlines Center. And like, there are very few people in the world that can say I have a statue of me somewhere, but you can. Such a huge member of that organization, one of the best players, not just of that, that organization, but one of the best players who ever play hockey, period. I'll be honest with you, Mike. I'm trying to put myself in your mind space here when you find out that they're going to make a statue of you, because once the statue is unveiled, it's there, and you better hope that it looks good. Thankfully, it does. I've seen a lot of statues that don't really look like the person. You know what I'm getting at here, Mike? Were there ever any concerns? And, was the 16th the first time you actually saw the statue? Which I should, again, say, it looks gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, I never saw it until that day, so I was very concerned, obviously, and nervous. But we, we combed through a ton of pictures off Getty and the internet just to kind of narrow it down to what we thought might, symbolize, I guess, my style and what how I moved on the ice, not the typical slap shot or the trophy cup above your head. So we narrowed it down, about four or five of us looking at these photos, and came down to that one with the crossover and a little bit of the jersey kind of moving and flowing. So they were able to capture that so well. And it's been in the works for 4 or 5 years now, and we've made a couple trips to Chicago to kind of see how it was coming together. So I saw the early stages of when they started doing the clay part of it. And next to me was Barry Sanders, which would just finished going out in front of Ford Field in Detroit. So I was like mesmerized how detailed and fine it was, the wrinkle in the jerseys, the smile, the eyebrows, everything to the helmet, the laces, the skates, just the details was so minute. It was just really amazing. And then they pulled up the curtain, and I was just blown away. It was phenomenal. I couldn't have wished for it to turn out better than it did.
The one thing, Mike, that I think we were all hoping for, and we got it when we heard about your statue, was they have to do the jersey flap. They have to do like the way we think about you playing. You've heard this, Mike, you've heard this a million times. No one skated like you. No one made their jersey dance like you did. No one knows how you did it. I don't know if you know, or it's just like, this is how my body works in concert with my legs and my hips and my glutes and my hockey pants. I don't know. I should call them breezers. You played in Minnesota. You're breezers. Have you ever come up with an explanation? Has anyone shared anything with you for how you got your jersey to do that when you skated? Because it really has been like nobody else in the game.
I'm not sure where it came from, and I guess as my career, kept going and kind of moving on, it became a kind of eye-catcher thing kind of happened if I came up the ice. And I don't know if it was a little oversized, and I loved a lot of room in my sleeves, so I always bugging the equipment guys for a bigger size jersey just to kind of give me some room so it wasn't tight in my arms. So I guess that kind of allowed a little bit of a flow in the back. So, the aspect of skating was something I loved. It was the thing that attracted me to the game, and just the flow and speed of it. Watching Bobby Orr and, all these great skaters back in the day that just could get up and down the ice and just gracefully and smooth. And, I was always an advocate of there's guys who can skate fast, and then there's guys who can skate fast with the puck. And, so I was one that drove Bob Gainey nuts every day, because I did all our skating drills with a puck, and it just drove him crazy. And same with Ken, he just didn't. And I was like, well, if they I felt like I can get some space. If I have the puck and I can keep the same space without same speed without the puck, I'm going to make some headway and some separation from guys. So, I think that was kind of what I really, prided myself on.
The thing now is, and you know this, everybody does, you know, no one makes it to the NHL without having a skating instructor. You know, kids as young as, you know, 7, 8 years old already have skating instructors, you know, set their feet properly, set their stride properly, et cetera. What was skating like for you as a kid? Because I'm guessing it's nowhere near what it is now, but I'll put your stride up against anyone's in the NHL.
Yeah, I mean, it's phenomenal, the stuff that they work on with these kids and even the guys who get into the NHL, just the edge work and just, you know, using it to your advantage and how to keep your speed coming out of corners and the whole Mohawk thing that everybody's got going on. It's the new yeah. craze. But, you know, I was a real wide skater when I was a kid. And I went to a couple power skating schools actually in Toronto. And, you know, so we kind of, you know, brought my feet closer together so I could stride out a little bit more and have some skate on more steel on the ice. But it wasn't really until I got to probably 91. I got to Pittsburgh for the Canada Cup, and Stevie Ladin was our equipment guy who was doing Paul Coffey's skates at the time. And he's like, "Oh, you got to try this edge. You know, it's an inch hollow on your skates, and, you know, get a little more glide, a little bit more, less friction on the ice."
Yeah.
You know, radius. So I was like, "Oh, okay, I'll try it." And he put it on. It was like, it felt like the skates came right out of the box. I couldn't grab any part of the ice, and I was sliding all over the place. But he goes, "Oh, just give it a few times, you know, get out there and get used to it." But then all of a sudden it snapped and it just kind of came together. And I was like, there was just some great glide. It's smooth. The ice gets chippy. I was still able to kind of hover, and, you know, I wasn't digging in like that half inch hollow. So I think a little bit of that and some, you know, some savviness from Stevie kind of helped me get a little bit of more glide than I got usual.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned the that Mohawk style, the 10-2, however you want to phrase it. I'll be honest with you. The first time I ever saw anyone do that was Ulf Dahlin. That this wasn't like, I know Sidney Crosby sort of popularized it, but am I on base? Am I remembering this correctly? I just remember watching Dahlin play. I'm like, what is he doing out there? Like, Mike, that was the first time I ever saw anyone do that. Do you recall that at all?
Yeah, I do. And when we first saw it, I was like, what? You know, that was just, we would try to put our leg in that position. I felt like my hip would pop out of socket. You know, it's like he came to us, I think, in Minnesota and right after the finals year in 92. And, he wasn't up and down fast, but just the ability to kind of move sideways would mess up guys who are checking him or defensemen. They kind of lunge at him and he kind of keep his speed down the wall. He just kind of work it down the, you know, he was great in the corners, behind the net, the whole thing. But yeah, he was kind of like the iconic guy that first started that thing. And it was just like, it was mind boggling how he would elude checks and stuff. And it was crazy. And he was so good at it. And I feel like he was the start of that whole movement.
Yeah. He was certainly the pioneer. You know, hockey players, as you well know, and our audience knows, I'll have certain boxes to check, right? I'll want to get drafted in the NHL. For you, it's I want to get drafted first overall. Scoring your first goal, winning your first game, winning the Stanley Cup, individual awards, Hall of Fame. I mean, you've checked all of these boxes. Did you ever think at any point in your career that they would be talking statue about you, or that was going to be a box that one day you could check?
No, and I don't think even, you know, getting drafted was on my radar. I think it was just, you know, you're an American kid just, you know, playing the game, and you get through your Little Caesars days with my midget team. I really wasn't sure what to do. And yeah. You know, if I stay home and go to college, Michigan State or Michigan, Ron Mason and Red Berenson were the coaches there. And, you know, so I make the move to go to Prince Albert, and still, there's not much, you know, the only coverage you got was the Prince Albert Herald. So, you know, it wasn't really a lot of information kind of coming through the circuit there back in the day. So you really didn't know what was happening with the draft scenario, because I didn't hear much about it until we got home from the World Juniors in Moscow after, the Christmas 87, 88 kind of year. So then it came out, and then it just kind of got some legs of its own. But yeah, that was kind of the first thing that I really found, oh, this could actually really happen, that I could get drafted. So it wasn't until after that Christmas World Juniors, but you know, beyond that, you just want to get into the game and have some fun and enjoy, you know, the NHL and playing and traveling and competing. And, you know, I think after time and the duration, longevity, these things just kind of kept creeping up in my career and, you know, numbers wise and great teams and coaches and Stanley Cups and then records and this and that. So it just kind of kept going as, you know, those years kind of progressed. And, you know, yeah, you don't have these boxes written down or this list of goals that you want to accomplish in your career. But then all of a sudden I'm sitting here on, you know, after the statue, I'm like, man, it's mind blowing and amazing. And you're very thankful and grateful you played so long with some great teams and players and coaches. It just gets emotional, the whole situation in Dallas, moving down there from Minnesota, being a part of that growth of that game in Dallas. I think that's what's more emotional to me, that, you know, we turned on a lot of people to the game of hockey that still to this day, you know, thank us for coming down, that if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be playing. I wouldn't like the game of hockey. So there's always this connection with the fans. And then, you know, doing the speech and then kind of, you know, not being able to start the speech and getting emotional and crying, I think that's the kind of, I feel the connection with those people down there.
It was beautiful, and it was the whole thing was absolutely beautiful. I am curious, you know, right away when you see the statue, who do you think of right away? Because, you know, underneath the statue, there's the old saying, you know, tip of the iceberg and everything underneath holding it up. I mean, there's a lot of people that help anyone along the way, helping my career, helping your career, holding you up or holding up that statue. If we could see underneath the ground, who was holding up the Mike Modano statue? Who would those people be?
Well, I don't know. I think my first thought was, you know, having the amount of kids I have is five, just sitting there watching this thing. I think they really kind of still, the old ones are starting to clue into what, you know, maybe the impact of the game that I had with me and likewise with fans and the whole city and in the NHL, but you know, I think they just still don't understand the magnitude, and the young ones have no idea. They just, you know, they're just along for the ride. But yeah, I think of them finally seeing and maybe understanding what it was that I actually did on a day-to-day basis and with who and, you know, teams and how long and, you know, this certain experiences along the way. But yeah, I think it's the same wave of emotions with people like, you know, certain coaches and Rick Wilson, who took me to Prince Albert, sure, was with me a lot of years in Minnesota and Dallas. And then Bob Gainey came in and the tutelage he did, and then Hitch came in and just kind of took it to a new level. Players, I mean, you just think of all the relationships I had with them and the owners, and, you know, winning finally together in 99, the bond you had with those guys, and then moving towards, you know, Phil Housley, Joey Mullins records and those things in the Hall of Fame with, you know, going in with Hasek and Forsberg and those guys. I mean, it was just, you know, a laundry list of guys. But yeah, I mean, my first look, glance was to the kids and just see, God, you know, they're here and experiencing. And the outside venue got canceled because of the lightning and thunder, so we had to go inside. So I was a little upset that we didn't be able to, but then being inside with the fans, sure, and between periods, and you got 18,000 people. I mean, it was just, I think it was kind of meant to be to be in that scenario, that situation, to share it with them for sure.
Absolutely. And that was one of the strongest draft classes you went in with as well. And you were a huge part of that, obviously. Mike, congratulations again. It's always great when we get to pause for a second and think about our favorite Mike Modano moments, and getting a chance to talk to you is always special. Good luck the rest of the way, and we'll catch up soon. Congratulations on the statue again.
Thanks again, Jeff. Great talking with you.
There he is, the great Mike Modano, one of the best hockey players the game has ever seen, and statue outside of American Airlines, which is gorgeous. Time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book. Bet local for the returning Matt Marchese. He's back like a vertebrae. How are you, Matty?
I'm good. I'm back, and back for the foreseeable future, except for Friday. So keep that in mind.
I'm back, but I'm taking Friday off, so don't get too comfortable.
I'm around. All right. Yeah.
What do you got on the go tonight? What are you thinking of?
Wild at the Kings. The Kings favored by -1.5 in this one. Minnesota 4-1 straight up in their last five games. They're also 2-4 straight up in their last six against Los Angeles. The total has gone under in four of Los Angeles's last five games. The total has gone under in eight of Los Angeles's 10 home games. And here's one from Minnesota, Kirill Kaprizov, riding an eight-game point streak where he has 10 goals and four assists in that stretch.
So the Minnesota Wild, these are both teams that are on back-to-backs as well. Kings over the Chicago Blackhawks 6-2 yesterday. Minnesota over the Ducks 4-0 with a win tonight. They each inch that much closer to that final wild card spot, even though Vegas has games in hand. These two teams face each other again twice towards the end of the schedule. The team right now awaiting results of an MRI. Jonas Brodin tangled up with Alex Killorn yesterday, thrown hard to the ice. That would be a terrible loss. Already without the services of Jared Spurgeon back there. We'll see what happens again back-to-back. So look for Flower to get the start tonight. So that was Line Change presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook, Bet Local. That is one of only three games on the board this evening. And we'll try to get to some of those games with Elliot Friedman coming up here in a couple of moments. But there's a lot to chew on today coming out of the NHL general managers meetings, including interesting comments from the commissioner, Gary Bettman, about hockey-related revenue. And also about the future of the Arizona Coyotes. Could we be nearing a decision? That's next.
Everything Raptors, before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Welcome to another edition of Matt Marchese Returns. How many of these return shows are we going to do for you?
Is it a whole show everywhere, or just a segment? I mean, if you want to do a whole show, that's a lot of legwork for you, pal. But like I said, I'll be back tomorrow. Friday, I'm filling in the 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern slot here on The Fan in Toronto. And then I am back for a while, I'm pretty sure. This is what I'm told.
You know what I like?
What's that?
If you're watching us on 360 right now, you can really tell that Marchese is going for it with the duster. This is not just like, I'm going to do it for a month, or I'm going to do it for a few weeks and have a sort of ironic mustache. Like,
no,
you're going for it 70s style here.
I'm embracing full dad mode right now. 100%.
As someone with three kids, I appreciate that very much, Matty Marchese. I appreciate that very much. You know, we've talked a lot about the Sean Couturier situation with the Philadelphia Flyers. That's kind of used up a lot of oxygen on the show today. The dominance of a team like the Carolina Hurricanes, the Vegas Golden Knights, perhaps starting to hear some footsteps from the Minnesota Wild in a big game tonight, as you mentioned, in hour one between the Minnesota Wild and the Los Angeles Kings here. What's grabbing you right now? Like, I'm fascinated with the Detroit Red Wings. I still don't know what to make of that game last night specifically, other than maybe if I'm Columbus, I've got a legit gripe about Mo Sider and a pick on Johnny Gaudreau. And if I'm if it wasn't the Columbus Blue Jackets, if it was a team that was in a playoff race right now, specifically in the Eastern Conference, like if it was against like the Islanders or the Capitals or the Buffalo Sabres, I would be fuming at that call yesterday. We all know the Columbus story and what's happened to them this season and what their future is. So it's a contained fire. Let's just put it that way. But, you know, maybe the Detroit Red Wings are catching your attention. Since the last time we spoke, which has been a little while here, what's caught your attention?
Well, I'll start with the Red Wings first, because you and I haven't spoken, or maybe we did briefly, about the trade deadline or whatever. But the fact that Detroit didn't do anything at the deadline was a little bit surprising to me, even just to add around the fringes. I thought that they were going to do something, especially after the Klim Kostin deal, where they started to clear out a little bit of money. And I'm going, oh, okay. This actually looks like they're going to do something. And then they didn't end up doing anything. So that was a bit of a surprise. But for me, Jeff, the one story that I keep coming back to is the Central Division. Winnipeg, 93 points. Colorado, 93 points. Yeah. Dallas, 91 points. And it's kind of the win it because you don't want to play the other two teams type of deal. They're all three very good teams. And you almost want to be the team that finishes first just so the other teams can kind of beat the crap out of each other in round one. Not that you get an easy route if you win the division, because there are still good teams that are going to end up in the wild card, but it's certainly not playing one of those three teams. That is one thing I think is a huge benefit.
I get that, and I see your point on that, and I understand it. The only flip side to that one is, okay, let's say you do win the division, and that's what you're gunning for. Your reward, you know, depending on what happens here with the Vancouver Canucks in the Pacific, your reward for not facing Colorado or Dallas
could be Vegas.
Might be Nashville. No, Nashville. We don't even know about Vegas for that second wild card.
Yeah.
Right? Because you may end up facing depending on where Vancouver does here, you may end up facing Nashville. So I don't know how much of a benefit that is. Like, I get it. If you're Winnipeg right now, you're saying, woof, we're clear of Dallas and Colorado, but out of the frying pan, into the fire, welcome to Smashville. You're facing off against one of the hottest teams for the last month and a half in the NHL.
Yeah, I would just take my chances just because Nashville has been super streaky this year, whereas the other teams have been pretty consistent the rest of the way, right? And that's the one. Now, Nashville getting hot at the right time is a totally different thing, because that can be dangerous going into the playoffs. We've seen it in many sports where a team gets hot going in. I mean, the St. Louis Blues is obviously the best example in hockey, but I always, and you're a baseball guy, the one I always go back to is the Colorado Rockies of a bunch of years ago, where they were like 10 games out with like 16, 17 games left, and they just go on an absolute heater and roll everyone to the World Series. They lost, but they still got there. So there is something to be said about timing and how you get into the playoffs. Like, you certainly don't want to be hobbling in, but man, there's going to be you could say this in a lot of series, but there's going to be a really good team that had Stanley Cup aspirations that you thought could be in the final. That's not going to get there because of the way that this format is. And it could be Winnipeg. It could be Colorado. It could be Dallas. I really want Winnipeg to win the division just because they had it so rough in that first round series against Vegas last year with all the injuries Vegas was a wagon. And it's just like, oh man, you kind of want them to have a little bit more luck, but they're, you know, I had this conversation with somebody yesterday. The Winnipeg Jets are so interesting because they don't have the star power of some of these other teams in the NHL, but they are deep, and Connor Hellebuyck has been absolutely incredible all season.
39 saves last night for Hellebuyck. He was the reason why the Winnipeg Jets beat the Rangers. Full stop. Like, I love Mark Scheifele, and last night was a night of hat tricks, right? We had Pasternak with a hat trick, Mikko Rantanen with a hat trick, and Mark Scheifele. Scheifele was awesome last night. And you know how I feel about Mark Scheifele to begin with. And, you know, it's that story is well told. But last night was about Connor Hellebuyck. But as Connor Hellebuyck will tell you, it's interesting. He'll always say, like, I've just been the same goaltender. The difference is, and this is where you have the nod to Rick Bowness and Scott Arneil, who's come in a couple of times, one when Rick had to be with his wife, and now when Rick is going through what's being described as a minor medical procedure, and he might be back by the end of this road trip for the Winnipeg Jets. Everything around Connor Hellebuyck has changed, and this is a team that defensively is a lot tighter. Like, you look at the Dallas Stars since Rick Bowness left and then got hired by the Winnipeg Jets under Pete DeBoer. Now, there's more of an accent on offense in Dallas under Pete DeBoer, more of an accent on defense. Clearly, this is Rick Bowness's sweet spot of the bat and has always been wherever he's gone. But you look at Dallas and how they've sort of loosened defensively, and they're more of an offensive-oriented team. The opposite in Winnipeg. And it's all because of one person, and that is Rick Bowness. And that's what Connor Hellebuyck will tell you. Hellebuyck will go out of your way and say, hold on a second, everything's the same about me. I'm still playing the same. The difference is Rick Bowness and everybody around him. And that is more of a playoff style. Like, I'm with you. I would, just considering everything that Winnipeg's gone through, I'd love to see the Winnipeg Jets do some damage, not just as a Canadian, but as someone that feels for those fans. Mm-hmm. And we all know what's happened to those fans and their relationship with their team and how the organization has had to sort of, you know, cop to the fact that, you know what, we haven't had the best relationship with our fans, haven't had the best relationship with our season ticket holders, and we need to change that. We've taken them for granted for far too long. I'd love to see them have some playoff success. I'm with you. Like, I would love to see the Jets go on a run here. I think their blue line is way underrated. I don't think we talk about Josh Morrissey enough, for example. The Toffoli trade has worked out spectacular. The Monahan trade has worked out brilliantly. The only person that I wonder and worry about here with the Winnipeg Jets is Cole Perfetti.
Yeah.
Who is, because of all of the moves, and again, like, Winnipeg can come back and say, you're a young hockey player. We're winning right now. We're going to try to find a spot for you in the lineup eventually here, but just, you know, hang on here. Your time is going to come. And if you're Cole Perfetti, you're like, well, look at my underlying numbers, look at my boxcar numbers, and tell me I don't belong in this lineup. That's the one guy, again, because there's always going to be one.
Yeah.
No matter how successful a team is, there's one that's on the outside looking in. That's the one that I worry for here. Not like worry, like, oh, he's going to demand a trade or anything like that, but he does very much seem, because he is the odd man out with the Winnipeg Jets.
It's one of those situations where, as a young player especially, when you do get into the lineup, you better make the most of it. And sometimes the opportunity doesn't present itself in the form of a lot of ice time, but you certainly have to make the most of it. And from the Winnipeg perspective, that's a pretty darn good problem to have, where that guy isn't a regular in your lineup, super talented, can be a player for you when it matters. And that just speaks to the depth that this organization has brought in. You know, I've heard Sean Reynolds on this program talk about, you know, like the Vlad Nemestikov acquisition last year, the Nino Niederreiter, a couple moves that you're kind of like, okay, they're nice little pieces. How are they going to fit for the future? But they work. They can play up and down the lineup. They can play in any situation. I think that that's why it's been so important where, you know, I mean, you can't lose stars. That, like, losing Mark Scheifele is not a thing for this organization, or losing Kyle Connor is not a thing. But they've built up enough depth, and the way that they play, they don't have to rely on those stars to, you know, score a point or two a night. They do a really good job of balance scoring, which I think is also super important when it comes to the playoffs, is having that scoring that you can get from top to bottom.
So let me drag another player into this conversation, because this is interesting. I'm glad you got us to the Central here. I want to blow this out to the Pacific, though.
Sure.
So with Cole Perfetti, as we mentioned, the Winnipeg Jets can turn to Perfetti and say, listen, there's no point in having you, play on a fourth line right now. Like, you're a top six guy. You need to be playing in the top six, and there's no room at the inn for you right now there. I mean, that third line is, you know, one of the best third lines in the entire NHL, and no one's going to touch that with Niederreiter, Lowry, and Appleton. No one's touching that one, and there's no point in having you on the fourth line. So I get that. And they're winning, and it's working. It sucks for Perfetti, one of my favorite young players in the game. This is just a tough one. This is just a tough situation here for the Winnipeg Jets and Cole Perfetti. But then there's another situation that I'm still scratching my head at, and I wait every day to see if they're going to finally do something. It's not as if the Seattle Kraken are going to get into the playoffs here.
Yep.
Now, it's also not that the Seattle Kraken have been eliminated officially, but
officially, Maddie, unofficially.
Seattle Kraken. Yeah, Seattle Kraken aren't making the playoffs.
Correct.
hate to break the news to you. I know, like, St. Jude, the patron saint of lost causes, Seattle Kraken are not making the playoffs. The thing that I can't understand is, from a developmental point of view, which is how you have to keep your eyes on Shane Wright, why they wouldn't call him up at this point and give him the NHL ride to the end of the season, and then go back to Coachella Valley of the American Hockey League for, hopefully, for that organization, which is a wildly successful organization, and a great story in the AHL. Great for his development. Go down there, have a deep playoff run with the Firebirds again, and then be ready for next season. The Shane Wright thing right now kind of boggles my mind a little bit. Does it for you? When you look at all the players around him from his draft class, and most notably Yuri Slafkovsky, who continues to just play a lot of games here for the Montreal Canadiens. Does the Shane Wright situation surprise you as it does me?
Befuddles me. I mean, they took him with the fourth overall pick. It's not as if this is a guy, you know, a late round, a late first round pick that's, you know, developing. And it's like, hey, you know, we should give him a shot. No. This guy has to develop at the National Hockey League level at this point. Like, we are past the point of, okay, he needs a little bit more seasoning. They got to let this guy swim a little bit here. Because it's, like you mentioned, it's not like they're getting into the playoffs. So if you had any worries about him and, oh, maybe his defensive game needs work and we can't rely on that in big crucial games. We don't have crucial games anymore. I'm sorry. And so that's the part where I look at this and I'm not saying that this is what happened, but the way that they're treating this situation, it's almost as if it was like, oh, Shane Wright fell to us and a lot of people had him going first overall, so we should probably just take him here. I don't think that that's what happened, but it's kind of what feels like what happened. And so to me, I don't understand why you don't give him a shot. He's played 11 NHL games. The next closest among that top four is Simon Nemec with 47. And so I just don't see, you know, and you could look at New Jersey and say, well, New Jersey was a playoff team last year and they were playing crucial games. And so I get it. Seattle in that same position last year, but this year is different. Now we're at a point where he should be playing games. And then when it comes time for him to go down to Coachella Valley at the end of the season, do that. Because it's only going to serve him better going from the NHL to the AHL, is it not? In theory, he's going to be playing against better competition. Yep. He should get better. So I agree with you. This situation makes absolutely zero sense to me.
You know, sometimes, and I don't think Seattle is like this. I've heard nothing to say that it is. Sometimes, you know, you're hesitant. And Berkey, we talked about this with Getzlaff and Perry. Sometimes you're hesitant to bring young players into a bad situation. Like if the dressing room isn't where you want it to be, like Berkey always talked about, you know, when he had Getzlaff and Perry and, you know, the frustration those two would have, you know, when Brian would say, look, this dressing room is a disaster. We need to, as Brian would put it in a very Brian Burke way, Maddie, we need to hang on. Let me get my gruff voice on here. We need to shovel out the barn here before we show the horse. That's what we got to do. We got to shovel out the barn before. So until we finish shoveling out the barn, Corey and Ryan, you're not going to be here. Wow, it's hard to talk like that. I don't think that's a Seattle situation whatsoever. So unless, like, I've had people say to me, like, are they just trying to slide the contract for another year? And I really hope that's not the case. I don't think that it is. I haven't heard that it is. But the Shane Wright thing still is perplexing to me, given that even though they're not technically eliminated, They're eliminated,
yeah.
And there's not going to be any postseason here
for
Seattle. This one I'm scratching my head at, but
I wanted to get a quick thing in because and we only got like a minute and a half or whatever, but you had Mike Modano on. It was great. The statue is awesome. And you talked about the fight strap.
Yeah.
So I had to look up Mike Modano fights in his career. Do you know how many he had?
Modano?
Yeah.
Oh,
Not getting sucker, getting sucker punched by John Cordick in Toronto doesn't count. So he had, one.
He also did the Keith Acton in Toronto.
Yes, he did.
One. Okay, who was it with?
Rod Brind'Amour when he was in St. Louis. So yeah, dropped the gloves at the blue line.
Wow.
Mike did not fare very well. He did okay, but Rod Brind'Amour, as we know, was a physical specimen. But I looked up and I was like, okay, Rod Brind'Amour, that's pretty good. No fight strap for him.
Well, I was going to say, like, I don't think he tied down his jersey, did he?
He couldn't have, not with that much flow.
You couldn't get that flap if you tied down your jersey as, you know, mandated by the National Hockey League. And the only way you're going to get penalized is if you get in a fight and you don't have the fighting strap on. So a lot of guys that don't do up the fighting strap. Man, I loved Modano. I really did. Like, honestly, one of my favorite players. And that's why I wanted to get into the skating with him, because that was of the era. Like, he was of the era where the guys that were just naturally gifted excel. Now we have an era where, you know, you can work your way into being a great hockey player. I mean, Maddie, you deal with hockey kids all the time and how much extra time they spend on their training, on their skating, on their shooting, and all of it. And you can manufacture a hockey player a lot easier now. But back then, like, that was you and your skills. Like, and Mike Modano just had it, and he could shoot, and he could, God, could he skate. And he was so much fun to watch. I just, I got all day for Modano. And happy for him and his family. And I'm really happy that the statue actually looks like him. Because that's not going anywhere. That's staying right there. And if the Dallas Stars ever get a new rink, guess what? The statue's going with them. So is Mike Modano. Thanks to Mike Modano for stopping by. Thanks to Elliot Friedman. Thanks to Scott Laughlin as well. Maddie, welcome back, even though you're off on Friday. Good to talk to you again. And thanks to our crew, Dave Siss, Lance Kennedy, Jen Rolnick. Show returns tomorrow across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on 360. And thanks for all the podcast downloads.